Right, welcome back. Right, so tonight we move into the next link of dependent origination, Vedana, or feeling tone. Now, just reflect on how many times have you noticed that you wake up in the middle of a daydream, of a series of thoughts, of worry, maybe a fantasy. Just that sense of mulling over a problem to try to figure it out. Like a dog chewing on a bone, just constantly just trying to get the marrow out of the thought. This describes much of our experience as modern human beings, that we go through life lost in thought. The famous line from James Joyce's Dubliners is that Mr. Duffy lived a short distance from his body. And this so often describes our experience as human beings, that we're just lost in thought, in a sense of a fantasy, of worry. And as meditators, we start to become more and more aware of this process, aware of how lost we are, perhaps to our frustration of how little control we really have over that. We wake up from a daydream and have no idea how we got there. Now, dependent origination is a elegant and detailed way of describing how we get lost in thought. How we wake up from a daydream, realizing that we've been somewhere else, not even realizing how we got there, becomes a very much a detailed map of how we create suffering. Now, if you recall that childhood game called Chutes and Ladders, you know how you have the grid and you roll the dice and you advance your little playing piece, and you get to a chute, and suddenly you're swept down this long distance back to where you started. Or perhaps you land on a ladder and suddenly you're way ahead, you know, both to your joy or your sorrow, depending on which way you go. And suddenly you find yourself in a different place on the game board. And actually, what happened is there's a cause and effect. There's a cause and conditions. In a game, you roll the dice and you land on a chute or a ladder. And in an instant, you end up in a different place. Sometimes with a sense of joy, sometimes with sorrow. Now, in real life, the same thing happens. You have a moment of Vedana, this month's topic of dependent origination, this moment of feeling tone that arises in response to a contact. This propels you down a stream of thoughts, a series of papancha, of proliferation of thinking, of emotions, of reactivity, of desire, of hatred, of fantasy, of worry, of anxiety. And you find yourself suddenly waking up to being in a very different place than you were a few moments ago, or a few hours ago sometimes. And this is a very human experience. And the Buddha also identified this and recognized it as the same process of suffering, the same origination of dukkha, and also of this process of selfing, of creating the sense of I, of me, of mine from nothing. So because of this, Vedana, this topic we're exploring, this sense of feeling tone, is such an essential part of the Buddha's teaching. He really emphasized it. 2,600 years ago, he left these clues that this is something we should really pay attention to. He puts it in dependent origination. It also shows up in the list of the five aggregates, which is another map the Buddha created to understand how this sense of self arises. And also, it shows up in the four foundations of mindfulness. That what the Buddha described as the direct path to awakening. And he devoted a fourth of that teaching and one whole foundation to seeing how Vedana arises, to actually observing it. So he said, this is something we should pay attention to. This is something we should attend to. Now, Vedana is also considered the weakest link in dependent origination. What that means, it's the link that's the most easy to have an intervention with, to actually attend to, bring our attention to it, and interrupt this process of selfing, this process of creating this sense of me, and also the process of selfing, of suffering. It's like right at the top of the chute, right before we step down and get swept down, is that very moment of moving toward it. It's much harder once we're sliding down that thought stream to interrupt it, once we're already in the midst of reactivity. Or to borrow the language that Tori will go into next couple months on craving and clinging and becoming as we continue with the dependent origination. So what is Vedana? What is this Pali word? It's usually translated as feeling or feeling tone. It's very important to not be misled by that word, that English word, that it's not about emotions. It has nothing at all to do with emotions, being mad or sad or scared. It has to do with this quality of being pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. And particularly that quality that arises with contact. So as we explored this last month, that contact of one of the six senses as they arise, there's this point of actually touching, of making contact with. As we make contact with it, there's this inherent flavoring of being pleasant or unpleasant, or neither, neutral. Now, this is the very first impression that we have after contact. Before we go into wanting or not wanting, into craving, into clinging. So it's often very subtle, and it's often overlooked, and often much, very much confused with what comes after. Because what's confused that comes after is much more obvious, much more dramatic. The sense of reactivity, the sense of wanting, the sense of anger, of frustration, of fear, of happiness, of greed, all those qualities that can arise, of lust, that's what catches our attention. Vedana is pointing to the much more subtle quality of just being pleasant or unpleasant or neutral. So let's give an example of this. So if you're, let's say you're walking out in the street and you see someone who you find attractive, there's something about them is attractive to you. That first moment of seeing is the contact. And then that next moment, okay, that's pleasant. That's the Vedana. But very quickly we go into elaboration, into something kind of toying with that idea that maybe I'll walk up to them, or maybe I wonder what they look like if they're not wearing a mask or something like that. You know, or you know, maybe I could somehow orchestrate a conversation. We can make this whole fantasy about this. On retreats that we often talk about these Vipassana romances or VRs, that when you fall in love with someone that you've never even met or talked to, you just see them on the retreat. And you make this whole story about them. Maybe you marry them and then you divorce them, all within the context of never talking to them. And so this sense of elaboration is what comes after the Vedana, after that point of contact. Same thing happens if you see someone who's you find unattractive. There's that place of maybe being a little repulsed or not liking, and then quickly we go into the story around it. So learning to come back to that bare contact is a tremendous skill and a tremendous aid to our practice, to our liberation. We so often get confused about our prapancha, our proliferation of thought around something, and the actual experience of that. And so we need to learn the difference between our reaction to something and the actual sense of pleasant or unpleasant. So we can think of Vedana as being something that's almost inherent flavoring in this moment, sense contact. So in any of the six senses, there's this inherent flavoring of being pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. So inherent meaning that it's programmed into us. It's conditioned into us, as we'll explore more tonight. And it simply arises without our intentionality, without our involvement. it's really conditioned or programmed into the very way we're perceiving this moment. So it's the way we paint the moment as being pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. Now, on the pleasantness, the pleasant quality of Vedana tends to drive us toward wanting, toward craving, toward greed, toward getting more of something. While unpleasant tends to drive us the opposite direction, toward not wanting, toward aversion, toward hatred. And then when it's neutral, when it's neither pleasant or unpleasant, we tend to just check out, perhaps not even notice it. It just kind of skips through our... Okay, can you hear me now? Yeah? That's too bad. That was the best part of the talk. Okay, let's see. What was the last thing you... Let's see, when did you... What was the last thing you heard? If someone could just type that, maybe Khaled. About 30 seconds back. Okay, let me see. You may have already heard this, but... Okay, we don't notice neutral. Okay, thank you. Okay, so neutral, we tend to, you know, just kind of glance over that, just avoid seeing that. It's just something we don't even check out. And we tend to also be really driven to finding something that's more juicy or exciting in this moment. So, actually, I don't think we really missed much at all there. So, Vedana. So, the interesting thing about Vedana, it can be really programmed through our skill, through our intention, through something like therapy can pre-program it, through our practice, and through life's experience. You know, a few years ago, we got a new puppy, and we put up a baby gate to kind of keep the dog from going places we didn't want. And one time, that baby gate fell over and made a loud, you know, crash. And now whenever that dog sees that baby gate, there's this unpleasant Vedana that arises in him. And his tail goes between his legs and he runs away from it. So this is this conditionality. It's been conditioned that he perceives this moment in a certain way. Now, Vedana can also be unconditioned. It can be, we can kind of transform it through our practice. So an example that I know from my own time on retreat was deciding to work with mosquitoes, doing walking meditation down a cloud mountain in the summertime and having the buzz of the mosquitoes, you know, something that I've been conditioned to have a very unpleasant Vedana come up with that. So it's unpleasant and I have a lot of reactivity because they tend to like my smell and I like my blood and I get lots of bites. And I decide, okay, I'm not going to swat at these mosquitoes. I'm just going to walk with them. And so I'd be walking, and luckily they would just kind of follow me around like this annoying cloud. And then I would turn around and they would catch up, and they would never quite bite me till the evening. So it was a very interesting process to walk with that Vedana of unpleasantness. It was really walking with the reactivity that was elicited by that Vedana. And but being just being patient, just coming back to it, being as still with it as I could, by the end of the retreat, that inherent sound, which had such an unpleasant Vedana connected to it, had become much more neutral. It had become much less conditioned, much less of a chute, if you will, in chutes and ladders to drive me down into that sense of selfing and that sense of reactivity. I could actually hear the sound absent of the reactivity I started the retreat with. So that's why we often suggest when you're sitting in practice to practice a sense of not moving with the urge to shift, the urge to scratch, the urge to think, the urge to check the time. Because the times we practice with that, we're starting to unhook the reactivity in a very fundamental way. So practice can start to change the potential slope of that chute and chutes and ladders. So things become experienced as more neutral. There's less reactivity that arises. Now, how we act in the past, how we our experiences, sets up how Vedana shows up, how that Vedana is kind of pre-programmed, our past history, our past experiences, memories, and our past actions. See, the past links the unconscious. The past links the pin origination are like the unconscious thing that works in the background of our experience and shapes how we very much interpret this moment. And shaping what kind of vedana might arise. So the contact, moment of contact could be pretty much neutral. We talked about how it wasn't neutral last month, all the whole month. But if we measured it, we said, okay, we're going to measure a sound per se. We can measure the frequency of the airwaves and the amount of pressure or temperature of a sensation. Maybe the pH for whether it's sweet or sour. You know, all is can. It doesn't have to be shaped by all the previous links. Doesn't have to be shaped by our previous experience. It can just be an almost objective measure of that. But as soon as that touches us, that moment of contact, then that conditioning starts to show itself in vedana. The sense of feeling tone reveals itself. So one way to describe this, if you remember those, you know, the mouse traps, the classic mouse trap with the board and the spring, and you pull it back and you carefully set the trap there, and you put a little bit of bait on that and hopefully get your hands away before it snaps on you and place it down. So this mouse trap, if we could watch that in slow motion, you know, ultra slow motion when the mouse touches that and how the spring jumps up and slowly goes through the air toward the mouse. This is what we're really doing in this exploration of dependent origination. We're taking something that happens in microseconds and expanding it out in slow motion. So we say, okay, there's contact, and then there's a vedana, the feeling tone, and maybe next month we're going to clinging, craving and clinging. So that process happens very, very quickly. But we can start to stretch it out. We can start to see how those pieces link together. You know, the hair trigger mechanism, the bait, the cheese. So all the mechanism, the framework of the mousetrap are what we've talked about up to this point. The sense of the sankharas, the sense of name and form, the consciousness that's predisposed to receive that information. You know, this is like the mechanics of the mousetrap. And the sankharas in particular is like what's pulling back that spring, this potentiality. And then contact is simply the mouse touching the bait. A sound comes to my ear. A taste comes to my tongue. A thought comes to my head. Then vedana is the very first movement toward or away, the impulse of releasing that built up potential tension, that potential action that's inherent in the mousetrap, inherent in the cycle of suffering. That's why practice is so sometimes difficult, because we have these built up potentials for suffering, for selfing and suffering is built deeply into our psyche. It takes quite a bit of patience and resolve to start to see through that, to release that. So this can happen with in any sense state, any sense contact. For example, let's take a word. So when I was a younger child, my grandfather, my mother's father, taught all his grandchildren how to play chess. Right? So that was a pleasant experience to have that special time with your grandfather, and actually got to play a few games with him in the last month or so of his life. And it was just a very lovely thing. I never became a very good chess player, but still that association predisposed me to, even to this day, when I hear the word chess, there's a pleasant feeling tone that arises with that. It has a pleasant vedana. And then I can easily go down this thought, oh, maybe I should finally learn how to play chess well, and maybe I'll find someone to play with. And all those things go through my head. That's going down that chute, right? I touch the word, comes in, and suddenly I go down the chute. I'll incline because of that. Now, it's easy to say, okay, well, everybody must love chess, right? So I say that word and everybody loves it. And I tested this out at dinner tonight. So with my daughter, I said, chess. Tell me what reaction. And she doesn't like to play chess. She doesn't like to, you know, to go through that process. And And so it's an unpleasant Vedana that arises with that. You know, and so that sense of pleasant, unpleasant is conditioned, right? So it's not, it feels like it's, I mean, it comes up right in the moment, right? It's like almost inherent to every experience, but that inherent quality is conditioned by our past, by our actions, by our experiences. Now here's another example. So if you're a card player, you know, there's a process, a set of rules that sometimes you play with or some games use that when you have a certain suit or a card, when that gets played, it overshadows any other card, right? It's commonly called a trump card. Now, if you're a card player, you're like, you know, you might really enjoy that word. It's like that may have a very pleasant association. For myself, I never was a big card player, so I always had kind of a neutral association. I didn't really deal with it. Didn't notice it very much because it was neutral. Don't pay attention to it. And then about 4 years ago, something else happened. I don't know if you noticed in the nation. And suddenly that word Trump maybe took on a different association. Perhaps for you it had a different Vedana that was transformed with that. That sense of that transformation, you know, it's suddenly we associate that word. It's like this back history. So we have all the reactivity that may arise from that. If we go back into the very moment of hearing the word and seeing that sense of being pleasant or unpleasant, that's conditioned. And it's a tremendous piece of practice. This is difficult to do because it's so subtle, but it's so helpful to notice, oh, this is an unpleasant experience. And we tend to assume everyone has the same Vedana that we might have, but this is simply not true. Especially here in Seattle, you know, everyone kind of has this assumption. But if you go south of Seattle, go north of Seattle, go east of Seattle or west of Seattle, you find people who have a different association with that word. They have a different Vedana that arises that could perhaps be diametrically opposite of yours. And they have a whole different set of thoughts and emotions that arise with that. So learning to recognize what that Vedana actually is, to actually connect with it, to make contact with it, to deeply acknowledge it, and to see how that's different than our reactivity from it, our wanting, our not wanting, is a profound way to take responsibility for your own experience. That I'm having this experience of unpleasantness. I'm having this experience of pleasantness right now. And in doing this, this is a profound gift to others. It's a profound gift to the world. Because in effect, we're liberating the world from our conditioning. We're liberating the world from our conditioning. This learning to say, okay, this is an unpleasant experience. This is an unpleasant Vedana. And all that cultivation of sitting still when we want to move, of not scratching that itch, we have this capacity to meet the unpleasant as too with the unpleasant equally. As too with the pleasant too, to learn how to meet that without having to follow the attraction that's in our mind's eye and the lust that might drive us to want to act. Say, okay, this is a moment of pleasant experience, and that is all it is. I don't have to add this whole realm of selfing, this whole realm of suffering to it. So practicing with Vedana, how do we practice with it? So as I said before, this is considered the weakest link in dependent origination, which is saying this is the weakest link in our suffering. This is the weakest link in this mechanism of suffering. And the Buddha urged us to attend to it by including it in so many of his teachings. Now, one of the many things I appreciate about the Buddha's teachings is his use of analogs and analogies of metaphors, especially the ones he draws from the natural world, from his environment. And a very helpful sutta around the aggregates, actually, is called the Foam Sutta. And he described each of the aggregates from a natural phenomenon. For this is what we use for Vedana, for feeling. Now, suppose that in the autumn, when it's raining in fat, heavy drops, a water bubble were to appear and disappear on the water, and a person with good eyesight were to see it, observe it, and appropriately examine it. To them, seeing it, observing it, and examining it, it would appear empty, void, without substance. So you can imagine the raindrops falling and the bubbles that pop up there and how they are inherently unsubstantial. They're very transitory. They just arise and they pass away so quickly. They would appear empty, void, and without substance. For what substance would there be in a water bubble? And in the same way, when a monk sees, observes, and appropriately examines any feeling that is past, future, or present, internal or external, blatant or sublime, or subtle, I should say, common or sublime, far or near, to them, seeing it, observing it, appropriately examining it, it would appear empty, void, and without substance. For what substance would there be in feeling? So how do we see it? How do we observe it? How do we appropriately examine this quality of feeling tone, of vedana? Excuse me a second, my notes got out of place for a moment. So back to the game of chutes and ladders. So you find yourself in the midst of craving, a sense of wanting, or aversion, of not wanting, of dislike. Right? So we tend to relate to something from that lens of not wanting, of wanting. That sense of the inclination of our thoughts, of our whole mind focuses around it. We start to chew around like a dog chewing on the bone. It's helpful to trace back, if you can, to that first moment when you stepped on that chute, when you first stepped on that ladder and that swept you away, that initial moment of vedana, and try to acknowledge that initial quality. Say, oh, this is pleasant. This is unpleasant. So it's subtle, it's hard to catch, it's hard to perceive that. And it's very easy to confuse it with craving, with clinging. It's very easy to confuse it with the thoughts, the reactivity, the working over in our heads to see the original vedana. And in that case, you can just simply notice, okay, what's vedana is present right now. It almost imbues the whole state of mind. Okay, so I'm fantasizing about something. I come back, okay, where is the sense of pleasantness? Where's that sense of pleasantness before I want? Where's the pleasantness before wanting arises? Where's the sense of aversion before, or the sense, I should say, of unpleasant before aversion arises? By doing this, we start to interrupt this enchantment of our thoughts, of our story, of our mind. We say, oh, this is just essentially, deep down, just a pleasant experience. That's all it is. And I create this whole world around it, this whole sense of what I have to do and how I form around this. You can see the language of creating the sense of world, the sense of me. Of course, I want more of it. This is by acknowledging the pleasant quality or the unpleasant, and acknowledging it deeply without moving from it, you can start to see maybe compassion is what's really needed. Oh, this is a difficult experience. This is a painful experience. Of course, I don't like it. I'm bringing a quality of compassion. I shared this story last, I think, a couple of weeks ago, and I've done it a few times now, but it's such a beautiful example of the jaw pain that Sharon shares. And just if you could listen to it one more time. As I was teaching with my colleague, Joseph Goldstein, when a student came to see him in great distress, the man said he had just had a terrible experience. He was meditating, felt tension in his jaw, and suddenly realized what an uptight person he is, how he can't get close to anyone, and that he's going to be alone for the rest of his life. "You mean you felt some tension in your jaw?" Joseph said. The man continued with his projections. He said that he was pretty sure he'd always be tense. He would never change. He felt hopeless. "You mean you felt some tension in your jaw?" Joseph said yet again. I watched the man continue barreling down this path of misery for some time, all because of a sore jaw. Until finally Joseph said, "You're having a painful experience. Why are you adding a horrible self-image to it?" And I take this very clear story that Sharon Salzberg shares and see it from the eyes of Vedana. Now, this man, in the midst of his story, in the midst of his reaction, in the midst of his selfing, it was very difficult to come out of that. Joseph kept coming back to the having a painful jaw pain. But even more basic was you having noticed the quality of unpleasant Vedana. Unpleasant Vedana. Now, if this man was able to see that, to connect with that pleasant, unpleasant Vedana, the whole story of being unlovable and being unlonely for his whole life would fall away. Because he'd be connecting right back to that moment contact. Vedana allows us to come really close to the bare attention, the moment of contact that we explored last month. And so this is the way to practice, is to say, okay, where is the Vedana hidden underneath all my projections, all my reactivity, all my longing? And we need to practice seeing both sides of it. And we have a motivation when we're amidst of a anxiety or worry, a painful experience, to try to find that place of unpleasant Vedana. Because if we can touch that, there's a way that the story falls away. There's a sense of relief, because we're not building this whole painful world, this painful prison, this health state, essentially, from that moment of Vedana. And it's easy to say, well, maybe I'll just indulge a little bit with the pleasant ones. They're kind of fun, right? I can just kind of hang out with the pleasant thoughts and the fantasy. But unfortunately, we can't choose one or the other. We have to practice both with both. And this is where it's a little tests our sincerity as practitioners. When we're caught in fantasy and in a lustful thought or a thought of greed, it's very pleasant. It's like a heaven realm right here on earth. Is to say, okay, let's find some disillusionment through this. Let's wake up from this trance to actually touch the fact this is just pleasant, and that's all it is. Just how it's pleasant, and how this too is empty. To use my good eyesight to observe, to see it, to observe it, to appropriately examine it, as the words of the Buddha urged us so many 2,600 years ago. And we always have to also have a caution not to talk ourselves out of our experience. To say, okay, if I'm a good practitioner, I shouldn't feel reactive. I shouldn't feel this because I'm spiritual. So always we don't want to deny what is present. We actually want to deeply, deeply acknowledge it, fully see it, fully allow it into our experience. And one area where this comes up, perhaps around Vedana, is that we think, okay, I shouldn't have any preferences in my life. I should simply be open to all things that arise, some of the distortions that arise around the concept of equanimity. And yet that's a distortion of the teachings itself. It's a misunderstanding. But of course, we have preferences. You know, we prefer to have pleasant Vedana versus unpleasant. But the trick is to free ourselves from our demand on the world, that we demand the world to be pleasant for us to be happy. We demand the world to be absent of unpleasant for us to be happy. I demand life to be a certain way. Going back to how can we free the world, free the beings around us from our projections, learning to connect just with this essence of Vedana. Of course, we still have preferences. But can we free ourselves from requiring things to be pleasant for us to be happy? Can we free ourselves from an unpleasant Vedana? It means we have to be unhappy. To start to do this, we find a source of happiness, a source of peace and contentment that's not based on situations or circumstances, that transcends it. It starts to touch, and what we talked about last talk, around what is beyond the unconditioned, the deathless. And just to conclude with the Buddha's words again about Vedana, to now suppose in the autumn, when it's raining in fat, heavy drops, a water bubble were to appear and disappear on the water, and a person with good eyesight were to see it, observe it, and appropriately examine it. To them, seeing it, observing it, appropriately examining it, it would appear empty, void, without substance. For what substance would there be in a water bubble? And the same too with feeling, the same too with Vedana. All right, so let's just sit quietly for a few moments and let those words settle. All right, thank you for your attention. And I'd like to just talk a little bit about the practice and reflection for this week. And I'll see if I can't copy it and paste it in the chat for you. Okay, so this month, or this week, notice when the mind is gripped by wanting or not wanting. Okay, so wherever form that might take, could be subtle, could be large, just notice when your mind's gripped that way. And you may wake up to that after been thinking about it for a while, kind of lost in the storm of thought, of thinking, of planning, of maybe it's enjoyable. It might be very enjoyable. It might be very unpleasant. Doesn't matter. Now, underneath all the thoughts, all the stories, connect with the basic quality of pleasant or unpleasant. Okay, so we're setting aside neutral right now because the pleasant and unpleasant have such a big drive toward our suffering. Next week, Suze will be taking over this evening for me. I'm going to go backpacking with my family, and she's going to talk quite a bit about neutral in her short talk. But for right now, this week, focusing on the quality of pleasant or unpleasant. Try to distinguish between your engagement around that state. So this is all the thoughts, all the preferences, all the emotions. That distinguish between that and the actual Vedana, the Vedana itself. Acknowledge the Vedana and meet the experience with compassion instead of resistance. And by doing that, can you can your happiness be freed from this quality of Vedana? Does it matter if it's pleasant or unpleasant or neutral? Can there be a refuge of happiness that's not so tied to it being pleasant or unpleasant or neutral? So please practice with this. And next week, Suze will cover the night. We'll have a discussion and a short talk. And then I'll be back in 2 weeks. But right now, we have a chance for any questions or comments you might have around this topic of Vedana or about your practice in general. And I will give you the ability to unmute yourself. All right. So if you have a comment or a question, you can unmute yourself and ask or share.
Hi, Tim. Am I unmuted?
Yeah. You are.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Nice to see you too.
Good to see you. Yeah. I have a question about the neutral feelings and its relationship to avoidance.
To avoidance, you said?
Or just checking out. Neutral and checking out. Is there a difference between the two?
Yes. Yeah, neutral and checking out they're connected because often our response to something neutral is to check out, is to just ignore it, to not see it. Like, you know, I think so we may have this shared experience that if you happen to get a new car or have a new experience, suddenly you start to see that car everywhere in the city, or you see that same kind of experience other places because your mind's awakened to it. Until then, it kind of washes through you. You just don't see it. There's not and that's because there's not a strong pleasant or unpleasant Vedana condition to it. We just kind of let it go by. And the response often especially you can almost say there's the two qualities of the practiced and unpracticed. So when our mind's untrained, when we haven't practiced, our response is just kind of go into checkout mode, to just ignore that, to become spaced out, or to try to find something that is more interesting. You know, try to seek through the range of possibilities to find something which has a pleasant Vedana, or at least something unpleasant, so I can engage with that. So that's kind of the unpracticed mind, or the mind we're not really present for, you could almost say the unpurified mind, or the mind that's really gripped by the power of delusion, the power of greed and hatred, that's really gripped, caught in the cycle of dependent origination. The other hand, though, neutral things become a gateway into how do we actually abide with experience. Because that, in that terms of that shoots and ladders game, you don't have a lot of momentum to go down something that's neutral. You can actually simply abide with it. You can simply observe it and be present with it. And this is often the experience that when you're meditating and you have this sense of stillness that's arising, and there's a sense of spaciousness, so things can be arising in your experience, and you don't have to do much with them or nothing at all. You don't have to like it or dislike it. You just notice it. And the subjective experience is that things are kind of neutral. And I think really what's happened is that on one hand, our reactivity is quieted down so much, we're able just to observe it. And the quality of Vedana is so quiet. It's just slightly pleasant, slightly unpleasant, or neutral. But it's not tying us into the need to think, to act, or to do something with it. So it actually becomes a really helpful thing to practice with, is how do you relate to things which are neutral, that have not much of an impulse? And can I still stay present? Can I still stay awake and attentive to it, even though it's not calling me into engagement of wanting and not wanting? And this is a process of releasing our addiction to selfing, really our addiction to suffering. Because that's why we keep picking it up, because it keeps us engaged. And being willing to just simply sit with something that's neutral, we start to become less engaged in ourselves. The sense of me becomes quieter and quieter. Does that help, Ramli?
Thank you. Yes.
You're welcome. All right, anyone else like to share anything or ask anything?
Tim, I have a question.
Yes. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, it's good to see you.
Good to see you.
So I'm thinking about what you had said earlier, pleasant and unpleasant, and its relationship to craving and aversion.
Yes.
And it could be lack of clarity. It could be some delusion. I don't know. But my experience, as I have understood it in the last couple of years in my practice, is noticing a lot of really unpleasant Vedana leading to and even more unpleasant papancha that I kind of get addicted to, right? Mm. So there's kind of a craving for that thought, that proliferation of thought. And I recognize the wanting for that thought, because I think it's something I can hold on to. I can hold on to that thought.
Yes.
And I just was wondering whether I'm delirious. You know, is it a straight correlation between unpleasant and aversion and pleasant and craving, or what's the deal there?
No, yeah, I don't think you're deluded at all. I think there's a lot of clarity in what you just shared. And so just to kind of paraphrase that, to make sure I captured the essence, is noticing the sense of unpleasantness and how that leads toward kind of that aversion. But then that continues into maybe a proliferation of thoughts. And noticing in the midst of that proliferation, there's a bit of craving. There's a sense of wanting that to continue, that wanting to engage. And if you could think back to the Four Noble Truths with the hungers to be, to not be, and that sense of that hunger to really, that tanha, that sense of wanting to become, to have a sense of place, of orientation, to have something, which in all its inherent qualities of something to do, something to worry about, something to engage around, that's that hunger to be established, to actually, okay, here I am. And I think most of us, if we're honest, we would much rather be a worried self than no self. You know, I'd much rather be an upset, depressed, you know, anxious self than not have a self at all. And that's why when we start to have tastes of that anatta, that non-self, it's like, whoa, I think I'd rather just get a little anxious to kind of bring myself back together, to kind of bring the glue back together. And so sensing that quality of wanting, of craving, is really sensing that fundamental tanha of thirst to become. And that's really what we'll go into in 2 months. Next month is clinging, or craving, and then clinging, going into that thirst. And that becomes really the mechanism that creates that sense of self. So how do you work with that then? Okay, so the essential first step is already, you've already done, is to notice that. It's like, wow, there's this mind state that's painful. It's these, you know, there's the content of my life, there's a content of my mind that has a lot of pain with it. It's unpleasant. And yet there's a part of me that wants to keep myself in there, to keep myself engaged, to keep myself formed around that. And underneath that, there's the fear of that not being formed. And sometimes dukkha, when it's so strong in our lives, you know, it's so prevalent, you know, that the kind of gripping things that sometimes our lives manifest that we have to work with. Meaning dukkha deeply like that leads us to this place of emptiness. You know, not emptiness of despair, but emptiness in that sense of self just can't maintain the dukkha. It's like we just can't. We realize the sense of self and dukkha can't meet each other. And sometimes the response is, okay, I'm going to engage. I'm going to find that quality of wanting. So I don't think that's at all deluded. I think it's a clear seeing of that. And so you can tease apart that one quality of, okay, I want to be engaged, and meet that with as much compassion, as much wisdom and space as you can, and see what it's like to want to be, that hunger, that thirst to be. And you start to recognize that, you know, in big ways and small ways. And I think that will be a helpful, fruitful way to work. You have a follow-up on that, Michelle?
Just know that thank you, that's very helpful. Thanks.
Yeah, I think it's easier to see that what you described when it's something pleasant, like I really want to stay engaged with this, but it's the same hunger to be. It just we're hungering to be an unpleasant self versus a pleasant self. But underneath all that is just, okay, I'd rather be formed than unformed. Even though if I really allow myself to be unformed, there can be this peace that transcends all conditions. And that's what the Buddha pointed to. That's what That's what woke him up, is seeing that. Thank you, Michelle. All right, anyone else like to share anything?
Yeah, hey, Tim. It's Peter. Hi. I wanted to ask you about, you were saying that the Vedana is the easiest of these to kind of free yourself from. I think it was something like that. And I remember a couple of months ago when Tiwari was teaching, and I forgot now, so help me with this, which of the links she was talking about, but she was saying, you know, this is really important, because if you can understand this, you can really, you know, this whole thing will, you know, you can break this cycle. But it sounded similar, but it was a different link, and I can't remember which one it was now. But I think it was like 2 months ago. So it was before contact.
Yes. So before contact would have been the sense gates.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, so that sense of the bare attention.
And okay. On the senses.
Yes, on the senses. So if I can just rest in that direct experience of that, so that can be a very helpful place of reorientation, because otherwise we get caught in all the elaboration, the ideas around something,
right?
Thoughts around it. And you know what I've found is as I'm teaching this dependent origination, I mean, each cycle seems like it's the most important when I'm teaching it. It's like, this is the most important for us to get and to understand. And that being said, you know, Vedana is classically said as being the weakest link, because the other ones, the sense of consciousness, the sense of the sense doors, which I think is the one she was talking about, they're all kind of in the background. They're a little bit more in the subconscious.
Yeah.
While Vedana is like really coming right here into the present moment. There's contact and then there's that Vedana. It's like right here in the moment. And so it's something we can actually access and see. And it also becomes this important critical link into the next stages, which is really what sends us down that chute and ladder towards suffering and towards selfing.
You know, it's
movement toward clinging, craving and clinging and becoming and birth. Right? That's the whole process of dependent origination.
Yeah.
That's where this right now, right, in these last two of contact and Vedana, feeling tone, are kind of already pre-programmed. Right? So they arise right on the cusp of how we start to get engaged, how we start to run down that pathway of proliferation. So if you can catch it here, it's just like the snowball is really small.
Yeah. And so the link she was talking about is really knowing what consciousness, what sense gate and what consciousness in that sense gate is predominant, right? Like if it's thinking or hearing or seeing, right? And is that right?
Well, I'm at a bit of a disadvantage because I didn't listen to her talk.
Yeah.
But I would say that the consciousness, which I did talk about, and the sense of the sense gate are very connected, that you need that eye consciousness and you need the eye to actually make contact. So, you know, and it's very helpful to notice which is your predominant one, which one is really driving your suffering, and to learn how to shift perhaps to a different one can be very helpful.
Yeah.
I'm really caught in the mind. Feeling you're going to the body sense, that's a go-to strategy that we use as meditators.
Yeah. Okay.
Does that help, Peter?
Yeah. I mean, I think what also helps is knowing that whatever you make contact with has that flavoring of Vedana. And so if you can be aware of what's predominant and what the flavoring is, then that's a really key part of being able to free yourself, and right, as opposed to just
noticing that flavor of the point of contact. Because if we don't notice it, then we really get convinced by our story around it.
It's like,
I really need that ice cream cone, and not realizing I just had a pleasant thought of ice cream. You know, and there's that whole way we manifest around it. And this, when you start to see this, you realize how much of your life is driven by Vedana. I mean, it's like the and I think Rodney used to talk about it as that diving board, that the board presses down, and then from there we pop up into clinging, craving, becoming.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter. All right. Who else would like to ask anything? Is the silence awkward or just silent? All right, well, it looks like that might be enough for that tonight. We have a few announcements, so if you could stick around for that. And I'd like to just share a few words about Donna. And also, as I mentioned, next week, Suze, thank you, will be covering this night, so I can go in a little backpacking trip with my family. And so it'll be a discussion, which will offer a talk around Vedana, and I think particularly around neutral, which is such an important thing that we often overlook it, because we have such a drive toward the unpleasant and pleasant, how that creates so much suffering. But the neutral can be this important gate towards something else. So I hope you appreciate and attend her teachings. And then just a few words about Donna. So the Buddha often would frame the large scope of his teachings in three areas: the area of sila, of ethics, of non-harm, the area of generosity or dana, and the area of wisdom. And he would hold those all as equal components. And he would often sequence his teachings in this way. He would first have people clean up their ethical conduct. Because if we're acting in a way that's unethical, we're constantly creating more noise and distress in our minds, in our hearts. And then once that quiets down, learning to act from a generous heart, generous of our time, of our means, helps us to go beyond that sense of a selfish, self-centered way to see the connection between others. And then, of course, wisdom is what we often focus so much on in our teachings here in the West. And so to honor that, when this teachings came to the West, the teachers like Joseph Goldstein and Sharon Salzberg and Jack Kornfield decided to hold the teachings from a Dana basis, that the teachings are offered freely without any requirement for someone to pay a certain amount, with a trust, with a deep sense of trust and hope, really, that there would be a support for the teachings. The teachers would be able to have their livelihoods met without having to go into the normal economy-minded way, capitalist way that we have our normal culture. And so that's how we've continued this teaching some 40, 50 years later, is that as teachers in this tradition, I offer my teachings freely, and then depend upon your support to help the teachings be sustained. I know it's very strange in this COVID time, because we don't have the Donna basket. We don't see everybody offering Donna. And so it's kind of easy to say, well, someone else will take care of it, you know, and it, where I can only give a little bit, so I might as well not give any. But it does everyone's generosity, no matter how large or how small, is all well received, and I gratefully appreciate that. And so to continue to have a relationship to Donna, even in this strange time, to still feel the sense of community, the sense of stepping into this 2,600-year-old lineage of freely offered teachings and freely offered Donna for both Sims and also for the teachers. And I'll share the link again for Sims and for myself. And now Cuba has a few announcements to share, if you could give her your attention.
Hi, Tim. Thank you for that lovely gateway into an opportunity to practice Donna. I'm trying to think about lately, how do I create some really specific habits around it now that I don't have that prompt of the basket? Just a couple things. We have a wonderful retreat coming up in 2 weeks, all day Saturday. Everything, by the way, is on Zoom, with Devin and Craig Hayes, if I say that correctly. And there will also be a guest teacher talk Friday, July 31st, the day before, given by Devin and Craig, and it is titled Surviving Modern Life. Our class is continuing on the Buddhist Essentials this coming Wednesday, the Four Noble Truths, taught by our local Dharma leaders, Lauren Wilson and Jerry Harder. And I didn't write down the time, but it's on the calendar.
It's on Wednesdays at 7 to 9.
Thank you, Tim. Wednesdays, 7 to 9.
Yeah, the local Dharma leaders are very excited by that course. They've put a lot of effort into it. And just a couple words about Craig and Devin's, their presentations. They're giving a talk on Friday night, a day long on Saturday. And they have this very fresh way of presenting the Dharma. I think it's how to not be a hot mess is their new book. So it's like taking the teachings of suffering, of dukkha, and making it a very lively, appreciable way. So they're both, younger teachers, so they have a nice, fresh outlook. So I encourage you to attend that.
Thank you, Tim.
Right, go ahead.
And Tim, can people jump into the Buddhist Essential classes at any point?
Yes, they can.
Okay, thank you. And then the last thing is just to remember all our wonderful opportunities for weekly practice. We have our Sunday morning with Tweri, obviously our Monday nights, and lots of other sits listed on the calendar. Thank you.
There's also the intro class. We have
thank you. Yes,
the intro last class. Week, and we have you can join this Thursday. It'll be the last time to join. So if you or someone that you know. We'd like to learn how to meditate. It's a nice chance to have some instruction. I'm teaching it, and we're going through the whole process from the beginning. So I hope to see you or some of your friends there. All right. Thank you.